Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. Jeff, 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 Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff, Jeff, Jeff.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Politics Report and the Iowa Business Report come to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. By the way, Jeff, do you have a new book? Are you working on a book or anything like that right now?
I am so far behind on a book right now. You don't even want to know.
But
it's dreadful how far behind I am.
You are working on one currently. It just is. You've got life going on.
It's desperately far behind because I spend a half hour a week talking to this schmo in the Twin Cities.
I mean, morons.
And it just gets in the way. But hey, let me tell you, it is a privilege to be speaking with America's Mayor Matt McNeil.
Oh God,
we'll start calling you boss, and it'll be great. You would be a tremendous mayor.
No, I wouldn't. No, and I don't. And it doesn't mean that I don't. Listen to me. It's like, are you insane? No. Okay.
Kind of.
Noel, okay. Let's face it. Have you ever met? I'm not talking about some pundit who came from law or the military or a long time in politics. I am talking about a radio host. Have you ever met a radio host and you said to yourself, you know where I'd like to see him? In the mayor's office or as the governor of this state. No, I've never seen anyone like that.
See, here's the difference. You are a man of the people. You are in touch with people. You are not born with a silver spoon in your mouth. You worked your way through. You're a veteran. You've raised a beautiful family.
Yes.
At least the Christmas card suggests that you have some association with those people. I mean, why not? Could you mess it up worse than the people who are doing it the traditional route?
And the same thing was said in 2016. Now, that being said,
no one said that.
Could you,
to what you're referencing.
Could he screw it up more? Well, surprisingly, yes, a lot worse. So, I
like how you were with me until that last point.
I'm amazed at people. We used to know how to stay in our lane. You know what I mean? I mean, we used to know how to stay in our lane. And it doesn't mean that there weren't times. I remember when Jesse Ventura, and he was, he was a city council member up in the North Metro, and he basically, he gave it a shot. And he did. I think sometimes you get people that get inspired. But I think what we should have learned is that one-trick ponies, one guy that says, I'm going to fix this environmental policy, or I'm going to fix this education policy, they're one-trick ponies. Running a large organization such as the state government or even a city government requires a magnitude of knowledge that's well beyond a lot of people. And that's why I have no problem with the term professional politicians, because those are people that have started to learn the system and get themselves involved in city government and eventually can understand how to do that. I get that a lot better than someone like a radio host, because I just think that there's a difference between having a base and having fans. And I think that's where people get confused.
Here you are wearing a Rush t-shirt today.
Yes.
And I assume that's Geddy Lee and not Limbaugh, correct?
No, of course it's Rush, the Canadian band. Thank you very much. The Grace Under Pressure Tour, my first tour. Thank you. The old St. Paul Civic Center. Thank you very much. Yes.
Okay. Well, all right. But here's the thing with regard to municipal governments these days, most of them are really run by professionals, right? Maybe you have a city administrator or a city manager.
Yes.
You at the very least have strong department heads. So even in a strong mayor council form of government, you have an infrastructure that goes along whether there's anybody sitting behind the rostrum at a city council meeting or not. And sometimes it's not bad for a guy who is, quote, only a radio host to go in there and ask the questions that common ordinary people are asking. Why do you do it this way? Is there a way that maybe we could do a little differently? Or at the very least, that common, ordinary, just a radio host guy can ask questions and get answers and then be able to say, oh, hey, I always wondered why it was this way. Let me tell you why it's this way. There's something about that that maybe it doesn't work everywhere, and maybe you weren't the best example. I still think you are, but, you know, Boss McNeil. Why not?
I will say, wow, now that does have a ring. I will say, I have gone and talked to city councils as a private citizen, and you do not want me going in there. A guy that actually knows how to present an argument pretty well, you don't want me going in there and arguing why we need to have more regulations on cats in the neighborhood. You know, that's you know, it's kind of one of those things. I pick my battles. That being said, if I was to suggest anything to anyone, and this goes for Iowa, goes for Minnesota, goes anywhere, many of your city positions, park and rec, the planning and zoning, your water commission, these are volunteer positions. They're a fantastic way for a person who is a little interested in this to go on out there and get a little, you know, civic experience within your community to understand how the government works and see if it's something that you might want to try to do more of. I was on planning and zoning for many years in my town. I would go back and do another city committee board in a heartbeat because I could see that very base level of local government and how it works out. And then that works well. Maybe you do run for a city council position or the school board. But the reality is I think that that's a great prepper course because not only can you get an idea of what politics is about, but you're actually doing a lot of good for your local community.
Well, are we not, in order to have, in all seriousness, are we not, in order to have a proper representative democracy, involvement by citizens? Absolutely, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I chaired the Cable Television Commission in the town where I lived, and it was fascinating to be on that side of it, to your point, see the interrelationship within city government. It at the very least, it helps you understand things more. So as opposed to sitting there on your couch with a bag of Cheetos and railing about what the elected officials are doing, you actually get a little better sense of things from the inside, and it sort of is your duty, right? I mean, voting is important. You're just thinking about the bag of Cheetos. I can tell. I lost you when I said bag of Cheetos on the couch, and you're thinking, how long is this show lasting? Because that sounds good.
No, you've got me at you were in charge of your city cable TV commission, which you already know where I'm going with this. Wait a minute. Who took MTV off and put C-SPAN 4 on here?
Basically, I got it because I knew how to hook up my own cable. And that was it. That was the
History International. Who the hell is setting this cable?
Who set the live stream of the Matt McNeil show on my cable system?
On a recurring loop. Oh, disturbing. No, I would agree. No, your point is right, though. You know, it is. There's almost a civic duty. It's like jury duty to a point. And I really would encourage you. I mean, if you have kids and you don't have time, understand you got a busy job. That makes sense. But if you ever want to, whatever community you're in right now, find out what community boards or volunteer boards, put your name in, get involved in that way. Because I'll tell you what, that's what keeps your city running. When you look at these political campaigns we got coming down and these elections that are these major elections, those are larger scale issues. But when you're looking at the day-to-day operations of your city, that's where you can get a lot of gratitude by being part of those committees.
Well, once again, the next time you whine and moan about something.
Yes.
We should just put the mirror in front. I mean, you being the fine listening audience, what have you done lately to make it better? And that's the short answer. You know, what have you done lately to make it better? Maybe you're volunteering in other ways. Maybe, you know, you're an informed citizen and vote. To me, that's the minimum. But again, what have you done to make the world a better place? And an excellent point, you know, if you're raising kids and you're running them hither and yon, that might not be the best time, but there will be a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all take our turn.
Indeed. Let's turn attentions towards the gun issue and possible common sense gun regulations that have been floated out there. It's really interesting how this time after Uvalde, Texas, that the narrative that the Republicans have gone with of, you know, not the time to talk about it, thoughts and prayers, we can't really do anything about this. This time around, and they've been doing that since Columbine, even probably before Columbine. That has been the narrative that's been pushed out there. Well, we can't do anything. We can't do anything. We can't do anything. Clearly, there must be enough polling going on with Republican politicians because at the very least, they're doing window dressing. I don't know how sincere they are about this, but down in Texas, you got Abbott saying that he's going to have a gun safety council. You've got McCarthy over in D.C. saying he's willing to talk about some gun safety regulations. There definitely seems to be, I'm guessing it's the polling has said enough's enough. You guys need to do something about this because the guns everywhere thing is not working. And so at least the way that the Republicans are dealing with this post-massacre news cycle is different than they have in the past.
And part of that may be, well, let's roll it back. On the day of the incident is not the day to be talking about doing something. Shortly after, like the next day, 2 days after, absolutely. And you did hear a very distinct difference. And you and I talked about this last week. You've got the New York Times saying, stop calling it gun control, talk about gun safety, in a way that is not just, we're using different terminology to mean the same thing. When you start talking about gun safety, and that's the phrase you accurately used as you set up the last few moments, you want to talk about safety, let's talk about safety. And maybe it took, sadly, the deaths of 21 quite innocent people to get people to say, all right, where can we agree? And if we do it under the rubric, the banner of safety, then that might be the breakthrough that is necessary, in which case, hopefully, those 21 people did not die in vain.
I will say, over all the other massacres we've had, for goodness sakes, under the auspices of guns, mm-hmm. Under all those other ones, the first thing that people come out, we can't talk about it. We can't talk about it. We can't talk about it. I think one of the natural reactions is why, even on the day of the last shooting, that they basically said, no, we're talking about it, is because we've had 10 plus years of we can't talk about this now. We need time to mourn. And the reality is nothing's getting done. It's a placeholder to get to the next massacre where then they mm-hmm. can say, well, we can't talk about it now. We need to let people mourn. The reality is I think there is a sharper messaging by the Democrats that is saying we need to do something outside mm-hmm. of just shrugging our shoulders. And I think that and one of the things I've noticed that they're focusing on is turning the age to buy an assault weapon from 18 to 21, which is mm-hmm. the argument they're saying is that, well, we do that for alcohol. Why not? Already the NRA is pushing back hard on this. They don't like that idea. I have no problem with it, especially after the New York Times opinion section last weekend where they had, 18 years old, gun bought legally. 18 years old, gun bought legally. 18 yeah. years old, gun bought legally. You clearly have a weapon that people are buying that they clearly do not understand. Some people who get them have no idea what the heck they're buying and the lethality of that weapon.
Well, and the people watching the video playing on my local cable system saw me look down at my phone as you were talking. The grand jury has handed down a hate crime indictment for the Buffalo shooting suspect. So, again, it's not going to bring those people back, but they are treating it for what it is. That was very much a hate crime. Mm-hmm. That was very much a targeted assassination. I think part of the Texas situation, Uvalde situation, and something that I've been doing, looking at this, that's a town of 16,000. I keep hearing people say a small town in Texas. Well, where we live, small towns, it's a different definition. Think of a town of 16,000 that you know of. Think of a town of 20,000. If this happened in that small an area, that close-knit an area, much less any smaller area. The difference on this one, and I saw the same thing you mentioned, 18. Here is someone who would still have been in high school, right? Mm-hmm. And so moved out of his parents' house, moved in with his grandparents, a month later turned 18, a week later got these two weapons. When you see that it's an entirely legal purchase under our existing laws, that's where you start saying, and I have said this for years, when you can bring me a piece of legislation or a regulation that would actually prevent one of these, let's talk. Now you're talking about something, right? That's mm-hmm. very specific. Like, okay, maybe, and you and I discussed this last week, maybe that quality or that type of weapon is not necessary. Maybe it's something that says 21 because 18-year-olds are not mature enough to ingest alcohol. Maybe we should extend that to, we already have extended it to tobacco. Maybe we should extend it to firearms, the full ATF, right? I mean, those are the kinds of limitations based upon demonstrated performance. And you have precedent for that. And I don't mean to belittle it, but this is how we build precedent. We used to let 18-year-olds drink alcohol legally.
Yes.
And then we changed it to 21. We used to let people across the country drive 70 miles an hour, and then we rolled it back to 55 and then inched back depending on the roadway. The point is, you can limit behavior. You can constitutionally limit behavior based upon performance of the public. And if, you know, the consequences of allowing 18-year-olds who might still be in high school to legally purchase weapons, not steal it, not break into their parents' gun cabinet, legally purchase it, if it's leading to this catastrophic a consequence, then you may need to see limitations. And again, we have plenty of precedent for it.
Indeed. And quickly before we go to break, they got the shooting in Buffalo, Minnesota that happened last year when they shot up the hospital. That guy, you know, there's a lot wrong with him. And when the witnesses were taking the stand to testify against him, he buried his head on the table with his hands over his head to basically prevent from looking at them and seeing them. And the scary part is that we still are at a point where not only can we ask the question, like, how does someone that mentally compromised get a weapon? But there are people here today who will still argue that even with all this guy has gone through, he should still be able to buy another one. And, you know, that's where, and that is the extremist, that's the far extremist side of it, but it is out there that they will fight to the end to make sure that individual has the right to buy a gun, even though he's already committed a gun crime, because they feel as if, well, one strike is not enough. I think we can agree that there are some basic things we can get done now, have a longer discussion about it, but yeah, I think we're at 25 counts, by the way. It was 25 counts on the Buffalo, New York shooting, which is, I think they got him on domestic terrorism too. So,
well, and again, that's all great, and it's good that they're pursuing that, but it doesn't restore the lives of those who were lost.
Absolutely. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come back. We'll talk about a SCOTUS ruling that's gone under the radar, but actually is a pretty big one, although SCOTUS is trying to downplay it. Jeff Stein is kind enough to join us. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein, kind enough to join us for his usual weekly visit. I showed you the Grace Under Pressure tour, which is still probably one of the best, you know, band logos ever seen, the Grace Under Pressure. I love that one.
Okay.
Where
else you want to go with that?
Well,
I don't have the depth of knowledge with the band. I'm the one who thought it meant Limbaugh. What do you want from me?
Tell me how awesome I am. No. Like I said,
Brandon, if you don't make that a promo, you just did. I got nothing.
It has to be, really. That's going to be the intro every show at this point. All right. So, two things from the Supreme Court. First of all, this Pennsylvania primary might end up going to SCOTUS. Determine who's going to I think a large part of this, it's a shame that you couldn't just have a 200 vote win. We used to have 200 vote wins and no one threatened to burn down the state if their guy was on the wrong side of that. I mean, as a matter of fact, what was Franken Coleman, for goodness sakes? I mean, it was you used to have close races and it just walked away. But in this day and age where everything is, unless you win, if you win, It's a symbol of American democracy at its best. If you lose, it clearly the fix was in.
Well, and you, in the Pennsylvania case, you've got McCormick, the not Dr. Oz candidate, saying he wants to sue so that they recount certain. And now you've got others in the race and the RNC saying, no, the preferred candidate won, so you need to drop your lawsuit. The same people, by the way, who were encouraging recounts in that very state 2 years ago. Oh, no, that's different if it's a partisan primary and our guy won. Then drop your lawsuit. There's nothing to see here, people.
That one's yet to come. They did have a ruling here that I thought was kind of interesting. The High Court handed down a decision that grants an emergency request from the tech industry lobbyists to block The HB 20 law in Texas, which would have hindered the site's ability to take down content they see unfit. So basically, Twitter, Facebook, all the rest of them, if you put up something that is, you know, wrong, that basically that, you know, if it's factually wrong or it's mean-spirited or it's inappropriate for the community, they take it down. Texas was basically saying you can't do that anymore, especially when it comes to, you know, political opinion, which I'm presuming they're talking about pandemic stuff, that, you know, you have to basically take a non-medical person's opinion on a face mask and put that up there as counterpoint, I guess they're saying. The Supreme Court said, no, these are private companies. And at the end of the day, you can't, I mean, how much do you want the Supreme Court getting in there ordering private companies to do certain things, which are frankly against, you know, their rights as private companies?
Here's the potential for danger. If you're a candidate and you post something, not talking about masks, just something political, and you're put on a 2-week suspension by Facebook, but they put the suspension in 10 days before the election, that really deprives you of the ability to say something. And one of the candidates in the Texas gubernatorial primary, who's also a comedian by trade, got blocked from Facebook that close to the election. So you do have to be careful. If you're the private holder of the information, you have to be a good steward of it. But again, you can probably count on one hand the number of times that big tech has stepped in, even inadvertently, and blocked somebody that close to an election.
What did the guy say? Was it appropriate block, or was it misconstrued? Do you know?
Well, it was to me, it was misconstrued because it was, you know, it was just, I don't know, shop talk. It wasn't anything weird. It wasn't anything like don't wear masks, don't get shots. It was about, you know, the opponents in the election. But the point is, the way that's set up, it just triggered an automatic block because of how the characters and the words were arranged, I guess. But all it did was make him more popular so that you'd buy his comedy DVDs.
Well, you look at someone like Paul Gozer, and I'd say Gozer, what he did after the shooting, and he basically put out the lies about the shooter. And, you know, you should be, I think that I don't have a problem with the company basically saying, you're just making this up to try to sell a narrative. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Yeah. In a Boss McNeil administration, that wouldn't happen.
It wouldn't. My cold iron fist of rule. Jeff Stein, once again, find the Iowa Politics Report on social media a little bit later on. Books over at Next Chapter. Thanks, Jeff. Hour 2 is up next.